Welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, August 29th, 2018. I'm one of your hosts, Jared Petty, alongside the Rogue One, Mr. Gary Whitta.
It's Wednesday.
It is Whitta Wednesday.
Therefore, here I am. I think on a Wednesday, therefore here I am. I don't know.
Is that how it works? That sounds like the title of one of your scripts, maybe?
That's far too highfalutin. That's far too.
You wrote a script called The Book of Eli. What are you talking about?
I did. Well, but then it was just a guy chopping off people's heads, so it wasn't elevated at all.
Oh, okay.
The title makes you think you might be getting something of substance, but then you just get, you know, extreme violence.
Denzel chopping people up. Okay. Yeah. This is a very good point there. In case you didn't know it, this is where you look for all the news about video games that you care about. You can come to twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. And watch this live as some of you are right now. You can go to youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and watch it later on. You can listen to it on all kinds of podcast services. Want to tell us what we're doing wrong as we're doing it wrong? Go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong and let us know every factual piece of information we are incorrect about. Gary Whitta, Whitta Wednesday, Woden's Day, as
Woden's
it were.
Woden's Day? What
Woden's
is that?
Day.
What is that now?
Well, that's where Wednesday comes from.
Oh, Woden, but what actually is that?
Well, Woden is another rendering of Odin. So
Well, I knew about Thursday, obviously, because of Thor and everything.
Thor's
I didn't realize that Wednesday was also part of that category.
Yeah, Wednesday is Woden's Day, Thor's Day, and then Friday is Frigga's Day. So actually, three Nordic connections.
What's the Friday one? I'm unfamiliar with that as well.
Frigga. Freed's Day, Frigga. Goddess.
Your Nordic mythology is superior to mine.
Really?
I'm not an expert.
I figured you for a Nordic mythology.
It doesn't go
guy.
Far beyond the Marvel movies, my knowledge of Nordic mythology.
I know a little bit. Yeah? If you're going
to
be part of a pantheon, which pantheon would you be a part of?
I mean, I know there are other choices. Obviously, the Greeks and the Romans are the two main ones.
But, you have so many more, though. You could be part of the Egyptian pantheon. You'd be part of a pantheon of greatness.
I think I like the Viking gods the best.
Yeah, they're pretty rad.
They're badass.
Ladies and gentlemen, some housekeeping. First, Human Fall Flat sponsored this week's Party Mode to promote their multiplayer mode that's new to consoles. So check it out Wednesday on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Then we're playing Human Fall Flat at the Kinda Funny Intersight Championship Saturday at PAX. Come on out and watch it. Speaking of PAX this week, we're all over it. Greg, Jared, Andrea, and more than 20 of your favorite video game personalities are squaring off in the Kinda Funny Intersight Championship. That's Saturday, 7 p.m. in the Hydra Theater. Once again, Saturday at 7 p.m. in the Hydra Theater. I guarantee that I will lose. Gary Whitta, you will not be there.
I'm losing by default, simply by not being there.
Simply by not showing up.
I'm pretty sure I would lose if I were there, though.
Nonsense,
I'm
Gary.
Not good at video
You're
games.
You're a true winner.
I haven't been proficient. I haven't been a competent competitor, someone to fear in video games since Quake 2.
Okay.
That's probably the last game I was fearsomely good at.
But it's you were someone to fear in Quake 2?
Oh my God, I was the PC Gamer Office champion. You couldn't beat me.
Oh, that's kind of terrifying.
And I used to really annoy people by playing Carly Simon's Nobody Does It Better all the time from my office as I was beating people in Quake 2 over the LAN. I used to troll people before trolling was even a thing.
You heard it here first, folks. Carly Simon, Quake 2, and Gary Whitta. Also at PAX, Greg, Jared, Corey Barlog, and more are talking about the perfect Superman game. That's Friday at 3 p.m. in the Wyvern Theater. That will be streamed live on twitch.tv through PAX's service if you want to watch it there. And also, if you're going to be there, please show up because we're going to hear Greg's pitch for the perfect Superman game. We're going to hear a lot of people's pitch for the perfect Superman game. Kat Bailey from US Gamer, Sydney Goodman, host/producer from IGN, Corey Barlog, creator of God of War, all kinds of great stuff going on there. By the way, if you're going to be at PAX, you can also join me, John Ryan, Christine Steimer, and Brittany Brombacher. We're going to be doing Red Dead Radio Live 3 p.m. That's on Saturday, 3 p.m. Saturday, in the Sasquatch Theater, appropriately named Sasquatch Theater for a Rockstar game. Pretty excited about that.
Yes.
Got a
yes.
little bit of Sasquatches.
Do you have anything special planned for that? Are you going to cook up some beans or?
No, we're not going to cook up any beans, but we are going to give some things away, and we're going to talk about the Western video games that came before Red Dead Redemption.
Okay.
That's the topic for that show. All the Western themed games.
Do you ever talk about Red Dead Revolver on your podcast? Because that's the one that kind of gets forgotten about, isn't it?
We're going to talk about Revolver at PAX.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. That's, the game
afterwards.
That started it all, and yet it's largely forgotten.
Got a copy of it sitting on my desk right now.
I like it. I like
Indeed.
The way you think.
That's right. And on top of that, Andrea and What's Good Games take to the Hydra stage at 10 a.m. Sunday. Hydra stage, 10 a.m. Sunday. What's Good Games? What's good, folks? Andrea's good. Britt's good. Steimer's good. Check them out. They're superb. Finally, Monday of Labor Day at Crunchyroll Expo, join Jared, that's me, as he hosts the Dragon Quest panel with series creator Yuji Horii. That's Monday at 3 at Crunchyroll Expo. If you're going to be in San Jose at Crunchyroll, stop by, say hi. I'd love to meet you.
You are just everywhere these days.
It's going to be a busy week. That's a lot of housekeeping, but all the PAX...
PAX week, I get why there'd be a lot of housekeeping. There's a lot going on.
Kind of funny family, just all over the place. You and your family, also all over the place.
We're going to Vegas for the weekend. I'm getting far away from PAX and the disease. That are prevalent there as possible. I'm actually kind of sad because I love PAX. It is by far my favorite show. Mm-hmm. It is so authentic. It is the place to be if you love games. And we were planning to be there until the very last minute, and I realized we had the scheduling conflict. I keep saying it next year, though. Next year I'm going to be there, and I'm going to make up for my previous lost years at PAX by doing. I'm going to try and do something. I don't know. I'm going to try to be on as many panels and do as much stuff as possible. Right. So book me now for next year's PAX.
I booked you for this year's PAX.
I know, and I let you down at the last minute, and I will make it. I will make it up to you. Next year's PAX is going to be spectacular.
I believe you.
Spectacular.
Spectacular, indeed. That is a long housekeeping, folks. Also, by the way, need to remember this. We're brought to you today by Hims, but I'll tell you about that later because it is time for what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. Four items on the Roper Report today.
A baker's dozen.
Okay, I keep wanting to say Dragula. Rob Zombie Dragoolia? Classic. Stealing that from Michael Grimm.
Is it Dragoolia?
I believe it's Dragoolia Lost is Nintendo's Dragoolia? New mobile game. This is from Grayson Morales, Big Twinfinite. Nintendo has announced that their next mobile game, Dragalia Lost.
No, wait, is it Dragoolia or Dragalia?
I don't know.
Two different ways here.
Okay, they got Dragalia. I think it's Dragalia. All right,
Dragalia.
We're going to say Dragalia here. Nintendo's announced their next mobile game, Dragalia Lost, will be launching on September 27th in the U.S., Japan, Hong Kong, Taiwan, and Macau. Dragalia Lost is a vast multiplayer RPG in the palm of your hand. It's being co-developed by Cygames and Nintendo. Thanks to Nintendo Everything, says Big Twinfinite. Not much is known about Dragalia Lost. We actually weren't even aware of this game was in existence. But Nintendo is presenting a direct live stream later today that we can assume will shed more light on the multiplayer-centric mobile RPG. So that story there from Big Twinfinite. Gary Whitta, your thoughts?
Not a lot of detail.
New IP from Nintendo.
But new Nintendo RPG that fits in the palm of your hand. Now, that presumably is to say the Switch, but the Switch doesn't really fit in the palm of your hand, does it?
No, you have to have big hands for the Switch.
You'd have to have a very large palm.
Shaq, I bet you it fits in
Shaq,
his hand.
It would fit in Shaq's hand.
But it does fit in the palm of your hand on your mobile device.
Oh, so you think it might be for mobile devices?
Oh, this is a mobile game. New mobile game. This is a mobile-targeted game.
Okay. I saw Nintendo and mobile and assumed immediately that that would be the Switch.
No, Gary, what are we're talking about mobile-targeted games here, my friend.
Okay. This will be on my iPhone and what have you.
And that's really what I want to ask you about the distinction here, Gary. So Nintendo, now they have this incredible hybrid handheld system that's taken the world by storm. We all love it very much.
Yes.
Yet they also have an obvious mobile strategy based around iOS, Android, etc., with things like Super Mario Run, Fire Emblem, etc.
Right.
How, if you're Nintendo, how do you decide what's going on Switch, what's going on phone, and what are the different approaches you're going to take to those two platforms?
I wouldn't know how to decide what should go on which, but I do like that they're supporting both. I like the fact that the Switch hasn't led to them abandoning the phone platforms. I was very excited, even though it didn't do as well as I think some people hoped. I loved Super Mario Run.
Mm-hmm.
I love Pokemon Go.
Uh-huh.
I'm glad that they are supporting that you can have Nintendo truly in the palm of your hand. Super Mario Run is really good, by the way.
Yes.
I don't know why it didn't do better, because it's a legit Mario game. They found a way to make it work just with your thumb, just one button, just hitting the screen, and it works really well.
Yeah, people describe it as an endless runner, but I think that's not particularly accurate.
That does
it's
it
more
disservice.
Of an endless platformer.
Yes.
It's really well designed.
Yes.
It's very precise. I think, Gary, that the problem is those marketplaces have largely been taught that games that are going to receive popular acceptance are not going to be premium. Nintendo effectively said, hey, you can have Mario Run. You got the first few levels for free. If you want the rest, pay one price, get the whole thing. That's what I did. That's what I love. That's what I want. But right now, the mobile market does not seem to follow suit. They want to be microed to death. I don't like the fact that that's what that audience seems to thrive on. And when I say that audience, I'm talking about the broader, larger, super blue ocean audience of mobile games that are sitting out there, not the smaller, fringy community that buys things off the Android premium store every week, which is where I fall. I think Nintendo kind of got burned by their commitment to giving a fair game for a fair price and are going to have to adapt around this. So I do not anticipate we're going to pay one price for Dragalia. I think we can expect the kind of, unfortunately, free-to-play crap that
it's
we sometimes
get. It's a shame
because
I thought the Super Mario model, I had hoped that would point the way forward, which is, okay, download it for free,
yeah,
play a good chunk of it for free, but if you wanted the whole thing, $10, but that's all you ever pay. And you're good.
Yeah.
And that is simple. You're not going to micro me to death, as you say. I like that. I understand it. $10 is a great value for that game. But again, we're living in an age now where the 99 cent and free app economy has destroyed our perception of value.
Yeah.
And you go, ooh, $9.99, bit pricey. That's a couple of coffees at Starbucks. You pay that all the time without even thinking about it, most of us. But suddenly when it's put on a premium Mario game for your phone, that suddenly seems expensive. Our perception of value when it comes to mobile and games is so distorted right now. That I think that's part of the reason why it's really hard to find a happy medium between micro and just one size fits all.
It is frustrating. I mean, I love Pokemon Go. I think it's extraordinarily creative. And I think that as mobile game models go, that one's more fair than most. But I still find myself, despite a great respect for it, gravitating away from it because of the economy.
Yeah.
And I worry about Dragalia Lost the same way. But
so what do you think? I mean, there's no indication of how this is going to be modeled economically, right?
Yeah, and RPG, who knows? I just think that based on previous indicators around Super Mario Run's relatively modest financial response, that we're going to see something much more free-to-play model-y here around this. I'd be very surprised if we don't.
See. I mean, not that those models can't also be healthy.
Fortnite.
It's just, yeah.
Fortnite's great.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. People say Fortnite is free to play, which technically it is. But the point has been made that many Fortnite players have spent more on Fortnite than you would on the average PUBG player. Because PUBG, again, whatever it is, $30, you're in, you're out, you're done, play it forever. Fortnite, I bet you if you looked at, like, say, even just the top 20% of players that have monetized themselves into Fortnite, you're probably looking at thousands of dollars.
No, 99.9% of corporations will not give you something for free unless they think they can actually make more money off it than charging you an upfront price at what's considered fair market value.
Of course.
Yeah.
So I would suggest that maybe the majority of Fortnite players have spent more than the full retail price of the game had it been set up as a retail game.
I would love to see that data laid out.
They must be swimming in money over there, Jared.
They got some money. And they, yet again, they did it right. Because if they want to charge for cosmetics, I'm fine with that. I don't mind that at all. I don't mind that at all. Number two story. The Robot White Xbox One X Fallout 76 Bundle and White Special Edition Xbox Elite Controller announced. Holy crap. That's a long sentence. This by ye old Adam Bankhurst of IGN. Microsoft has just announced the first ever white Xbox One X and Xbox Elite wireless controller, along with a new white Turtle Beach headset. Revealed on Major Nelson's blog, the Xbox One X Robot White Special Edition Fallout 76 Bundle, good lord, that's a lot of capital letters, will feature the first white, specifically Robot White Xbox One X. That's the stupidest name ever, Xbox One X. And would come packaged with a digital download of Fallout 76 and a white Xbox One controller.
Oh, that's right. The Xbox One S was white, wasn't it, when it first came out? But not the X. The X has only ever been black.
Now we got that Xbox One X white. The Xbox One X Robot White Special Edition Fallout 76 bundle will be available worldwide starting on November 14th, 2018 for $499 exclusively at GameStop, said the Microsoft Store. And the Microsoft Store. Pre-ordering the console will give you access to Fallout 76 Break-In Early Test Application, a.k.a. Beta.
Very good.
There we go. That arrives in October. Also announced was the Xbox Elite Wireless Controller White Special Edition that is a white redesign of 2015's Black Elite Controller that we said is, quote, a near-perfect game controller with a price tag that's hard to swallow. The Xbox Elite Wireless Controller White Special Edition is compatible with all Xbox One consoles, Windows 10 PCs, and tablets, and will be available worldwide on October 16th, 2018 for $149.99, also exclusively at GameStop and the Microsoft Store.
Why do you think PlayStation's never done their version of the Elite Controller? What would that even look like? Can you imagine a version of the DualShock that has those kind of paddles underneath it the way that the Elite controller does?
What I imagine is just the we finally get it, and it's just the old PS3 boomerang prototype.
Oh, God,
they
that
just
thing?
Use the mold.
Banana?
Yeah, they just take the mold from that and reissue it. That would be amazing.
That was their version of the Duke, except they never actually released it.
Yeah,
but that thing was awful, wasn't it?
It looked like a batarang.
I put that up there with the Duke, although, again, I personally like the Duke, but I get most people didn't. The original iMac hockey puck mouse, remember that thing that was unusable?
Oh, yeah. You're talking about the 98 one? Yeah.
Sony had the good sense to say, nah, come on. Yeah. Get real now. We're not actually going to release that, are we?
I like big, stupid, ugly controllers a lot. I actually think that they're kind of representative of the technical excess that makes games kind of fun.
Yeah.
So in a way, I kind of wish that horrible thing had been released. But, I mean, obviously the Elite's
Do you
a
like
beautiful
the Elite controller. The Xbox One?
I don't like it $149 worth.
No.
I can think of many other things I would spend $149 on.
But if you had
one,
would you rather use that than a regular controller?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
You?
I've never used one. I'm a little bit afraid of it. It looks like he's got these kind of like gynecological tools underneath it. These big kind of silver spatula type things.
I don't fear gynecological tools.
You don't fear them?
No.
Well, perhaps because they're not for you.
I mean, you
don't have a gynecological aspect to your physiology.
I am moving on from this discussion.
I do. I want to ask one more question. Let's just try and get this back on track. I want to ask one more question. So when it says robot white, do you think this is just white, or is it going to have some kind of 76 skin?
I think it's Xbox white.
No decals or anything?
No, I think it's just that Xbox white.
I wonder if robot white means like just absolutely stark white, or if there's some kind of, you know, like a little bit of off-white to
it. I suspect it's that same kind of cream white, like portal drone color.
I like that color.
The other Xbox.
Yeah.
Do you care about console colors particularly?
I have the black PS4 Pro and the black Xbox One X, and that's what I like because I have a black entertainment center, and I just want stuff to disappear into it. I don't want my consoles to stand out. I want to, if they could not be visible at all, that would be great. I don't need to see them.
So
the bright red Spider-Man PS4 would not, or the white Xbox One X, it would stick out like a sore thumb. And it draws your eye to it. And I don't want to be doing that. I only want to be looking at the screen.
You're the second person this morning I've had a discussion like that with. So that's not an issue that troubles me because I live in a world of complete chaos.
So you're happy to have like rainbow colors of all these, like a red, bright, not Fire Engine red PlayStation and like a gold Xbox thing over here. You are happy to have that?
Yeah, no, I've seen plenty of ugly consoles I don't want. Sometimes I'll see consoles that are hideous.
That God of War one was hideous.
I tend to look, and there was this Final Fantasy 15 PS4 that they sent to IGN once, and I still, it's indescribably ugly. But there's, for me, it's not a matter of how it fits in my room. I understand that concern. For me, it's a matter of what are the artistic merits of that particular version of the console standing on its own.
Right.
I would rather they design around making a good-looking console that's good-looking on its own than a good-looking console that's good-looking in the context of my other devices or my room. Now,
but it is going to be in a context. It is going to sit on its own. It is ultimately going to be surrounded by other things, and that's part of the whole aesthetic. But you're saying you don't care about that.
I'm saying when I'm weighing the two, I'd much rather have a console that I find elegant or interesting or freaking hideous, like that Pikachu N64. That thing's amazing.
Oh, I remember that.
The glowing cheek, just that thing. What's your favorite console, Gary?
Well, the one that I was going to say, the I was fortunate enough to see the 500 million PlayStation limited edition when I came in the other day, and I watched the unboxing video when you guys unboxed it on KFGD like a week ago, whenever it was. And I remember thinking, yeah, okay, looks all right, just dark blue, whatever. And then I saw it in real life, and I was like, wow, it's beautiful. Like the gloss sheen of it and that little copper number plate. See, that to me is what a special edition should look like, where the aesthetic is understated, and you get that it's something special, but it's not like, ah, look at me, I'm bright red in my face. I don't need that. I like the ones that have just a little accent color or something to make you go, yeah, I got something a little bit special here, but it doesn't need to be screaming at me to stand out.
That thing is beautiful.
It's gorgeous.
My all-time favorite console design, the stock Wii. I think that was
the white one?
The white one, yeah.
Why?
Or the black one, actually. The black one looks really good, too.
Why?
Because it's tiny, simple, elegant, functional,
it was just
slightly artistic. It's got that.
It was just a cuboid.
It's got that clipped corner. Looks like a Battlestar Galactica piece of paper. Slight angle on its stand. Love it. Looks unobtrusive. Just a great design.
I happened to see one because I was at IGN recently, as you know, because we recorded Red Dead Radio over there.
Yeah.
We were looking at the the little museum exhibit they have of all the old consoles. Mm-hmm. And I was at Giant, when I was at Giant Bomb recently as well, they have a bunch of, not so much an exhibit, just a bunch of old shit stacked in a corner.
Yeah.
And twice on those occasions, I found my eye drawn to the original Xbox. And I still love the original Xbox.
Okay, I'm with you on the Duke. I think the, original, like the original Xbox, controller?
I love the actual Xbox.
The Xbox, it's just like a big garish green Sherman tank sitting on top of my television.
Black.
Well, it's black.
Do you ever see the dev kit that was kind of translucent green?
Yeah, I've seen that.
That was nice.
Yeah, but it's still got that green hinge. It's like the Atari 5200. You could keep a small child inside it if you wanted to.
Do you remember the first time they ever showed the Xbox and it was actually a big X with a green jewel in the middle?
I remember that.
I kind of wish they had just done that.
Yeah, and then just packed the PlayStation Boomerang inside with it.
Yeah, so you could have the worst of all possible worlds.
We've come full circle. Story number three.
As a boomerang does. Sorry, it took me a little. I feel like I would have got more credit for that had I got in there quicker.
Better late than never.
Doesn't really count as wit when you need a few extra seconds to get there.
I don't know. With witta, it's always wit.
The hits just keep on coming today, don't they?
They just keep on coming today.
What else you got?
Spider-Man PS4 game length confirmed by Insomniac by Jordan Ramey of GameSpot. Insomniac Games Community Director James Stevenson has revealed PS4 Spider-Man takes about 20 hours to beat. Stevenson unveiled the number when answering an inquisitive player's question on Twitter. It's worth noting that 20 hours is the average taken from multiple playtesters. Stevenson wrote that 20 hours is about how long it takes for someone to beat Spider-Man on the default difficulty and only when completing some quests and activities. Those that do more will take a lot longer. So the 20-hour mark is for the average player who's not looking to test themselves against the game's most challenging combat or complete every optional objective. To provide a comparison, most of Insomniac's games are about 10 hours long. One of the more notable exceptions is 2014's Xbox One exclusive Sunset Overdrive, just under 20 hours on default difficulty if you only do some of the side missions and gather a few of the collectibles. So Spider-Man is much closer in length to Sunset Overdrive than Insomniac's other titles like Resistance 3, Fuse, or the 2016 Ratchet & Clank. If you're hoping to beat Spider-Man in a weekend so you could get back to chipping at your backlog, it seems totally plausible. Mr. Weta, 20 hours. You going to play the Spider-Man?
I am going to play the Spider-Man game. I'm so ready for it to come out.
Yeah.
If only so that Greg will stop fucking going on about when is this game coming out. Is it September 7th yet? It's getting a bit... That bit is played out, man.
You think so?
I'm so ready for Greg to just get his hands on this game and play it and stop asking, is the game out yet?
But then...
Because I can only take so many pictures of shirtless Greg. I love the man. But come on now.
Now, come on. Did
we really need to see that much?
I know you've got a scrapbook full of Polaroids of shirtless Greg back home.
That's why I don't need it on my Twitter feed as well.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense there. But 20 hours?
I'm excited about the game. Sounds about right. I'm actually glad that it's not 40, 50, 60, one of these mad games, because I want to be able to finish games and move on to the next one. I was just talking to Tim before the show about God of War and how his estimate was about roughly 15 hours long. And he mentioned that as a positive. He said, yeah, and it's doable. You're not going to be stuck in there forever. You can finish it, feel like you've had like a really nice, exquisite meal. You know, you got your fill, move on to the next game. The games that are epically long, I find that I'm less likely to want to embark on those games because I don't want to get 30, 40 hours in and think, Jesus Christ, like, I'm kind of over it, but the game's still not finished.
Yeah.
Like 15, 20, is that the sweet spot, do you think, for a AAA game?
I think it depends on the game. So I just finished Dragon Quest XI, which I reviewed for IGN.
Okay.
And I am now, I finished the main story, and in about around 65 hours.
Holy shit, that's a lot.
And that was, honestly, playing it, like, there's still plenty I could have done. That was just kind of figured what I considered about an average playthrough. And there's still a ton of post-game, actually really intriguing post-game, ahead that I'm kind of plugging away through
now.
So
the 65 hours isn't even the end of it.
That's just the credits, like, but there's a huge post-game, it looks like.
So when you finish, like, a 60-hour game,
yeah.
What do you think, I know it's hard to kind of generalize this, but, like, is that... Did you play that in like 10 6-hour chunks or like a lot or lots
all
more,
over the place.
More and shorter chunks? Or
I tended to play
several
in longer
mega
chunks.
Sessions.
Well, when you play for review, you tend to play things in longer chunks anyway.
Right. Yeah, because you got to get it done.
But I also had the luxury. Sometimes I just, turn on remote play and sit in my living room and just plug away for a couple hours,
Okay.
Grind a couple hours on my Vita through remote play or something
Vita?
Like that. It's the predecessor to Switch.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember that. Did that actually come out?
That did come out, yeah.
I thought it was one of those things like the Boomerang controller.
It's a great way to play turn-based RPGs on your PS4.
I guess.
But yeah, I was... So for a RPG, I want a big long game like that, maybe, most of the time. They're good short RPGs. But conversely, for an action or action adventure game, I want to steal a, I'm going to paraphrase Chris Kohler from Kotaku, mm-hmm. who once said that inside every 20-hour game, he feels there's a great 10-hour game.
Yeah, that's my thing. Is I would, I've said this many times, I would prefer a shorter game with less filler.
Yeah.
And 10 solid action-packed hours with very little downtime, to me, is superior to 20, 30 hours, but there's a lot of just like busy work and shoe leather.
Now, with Insomniac, I think what they've probably done here is they've given us, you know, what would have been a 40-hour game in ages past and cut it down to the 20 hours we really want to play. Their games tend to be kind of frenetically paced.
Right.
So I suspect this will be 20 hours of pure excitement.
It sounds like the 20 hours, they made a point of saying here that 20 hours is only if you really want to do Critical Path A to B. Let's finish the game. Let's get on with it. If you're the kind, if you're like me, that's a 20-hour experience. If you're like my wife, who's the kind of player who likes to turn over every rock and has got to read every codex entry and see every single thing before she moves on to the next thing, it ain't 20 hours. It's probably more like 30 or 40.
Okay, so by the way, again, recommendation here. If your wife likes digging deep, talking to every townsperson, finding every piece of treasure, Dragon Quest XI.
Oh, it's that kind of game?
Oh, my.
Okay.
Oh, my. Good. That's a great game.
And is it okay if Dragon Quest XI is the first Dragon Quest game you've ever played?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't need to know all the lore from the previous 10 games.
Not at all. As a matter of fact, it's deliberately designed to be accessible to new players.
Good.
And the story is not particularly, like, super compelling or anything, but if she just likes finding stuff and getting more powerful and exploring, it is perfect.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Great for that. Moving on to, we got a letter here from Cryptic Panther who asks, with Reddit blowing up regarding the Spider-Man DLC announcement, what are you guys or gals' opinions on DLC coming out so soon after launch? I, for one, says Cryptic Panther.
What was the DLC announcement? I must have missed that.
So yesterday they announced DLC coming very soon to Spider-Man.
Oh,
very soon after
like how
release.
Soon?
Like October. DLC coming out for Spider-Man.
Wow.
So
less than a month.
Yeah, like really, really quick DLC.
Well, if you played the game in 20 hours, maybe you're ready for DLC right away.
So what are your thoughts on publisher releasing DLC that soon?
Again, why not? I mean, it's there if you want it. If you want to get to it a little bit later, why not? What's the harm?
I think where people might get graded on something like that is like, well, wait a minute. Is this just something you didn't finish from the main game I would have gotten anyway?
Maybe,
you
know? But why not?
So why didn't you just delay the game?
It depends on whether or not the DLC is any good. If the DLC, when it comes out, if it looks like, this kind of looks like a remnant that you couldn't fit into the game, fair enough. But if it turns out the DLC is a solid new piece of content, like a legitimate addition to the game, great. What's wrong with it coming out sooner?
For a 20-hour game that I'm going to assume feels like 20 full hours. I haven't played this new game yet. Who knows? But for a 20-hour game that I assume is going to be great, if somebody wants to release a 3-hour single-player DLC, you know, a few weeks later, I'm great. If this were a 5-hour game and then somebody dumps like another 3-hour DLC or something, I'm going to feel very differently about it.
I mean, as a player, oftentimes when you finish a great game, you feel... often the way that you do when you finish a great book, like you're sad that it's over.
Yeah.
And you want, like, if there's another book in the series, you'll go straight to it immediately because you want more right away. So if for players that finished Spider-Man and loved it and are saying, oh my God, I wish it was longer, if the DLC is there right away, why not?
That makes me happy.
That's a good thing.
But the game itself has... So I think, actually, it's too soon to say what we think about this.
Yes.
I think we have to play the game.
I don't think there's anything wrong with the idea in principle.
Of
in having principle. DLC be relatively soon after the game.
But if the game sucks and then there's immediately DLC kind of I don't think it's going to suck. I think it's going to
I mean, it's hard to guess, but like in general, if you finish an epic 20-hour game and you loved it, do you feel like you would want to dive into the DLC right away or maybe give it a minute, come back in a couple of months and play it then?
I'll buy it when it's out there, honestly. The
even if,
is
even if it's
fall.
Like right there, well, like the, right away. You want more?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're in the zone. You're in the mood. You want to play more of it.
On the other hand, I don't buy a lot of DLC, so...
You don't?
Not a lot.
Even for like games that you love?
Even for games that I like,
Why
I don't
not?
Buy a lot.
Are you anti? Do you have a problem with DLC? Oh, you're cheap?
Yeah. I'm cheap.
Okay. You'll buy the game, just not the DLC.
Sometimes. I do sometimes. Usually I moved on to another game very quickly. I bounce between games.
You've got
fast,
to really so. Like the game. To, I don't know what the numbers are generally on across industry-wide, like what the uptake is on DLC for games.
Yeah.
But if it, like I already know that I'm going to, like out of the gate, I very rarely do this. I never buy those Ultimate Edition things where you get all the season pass and all the extra stuff like already baked into the price of the game. For Red Dead, I'm going to do that because I know that every piece of DLC I'm going to... I just know sight and seen, I'm going to want it.
Well, again, they've proven the track record with GTA 5 and GTA Online. That's going to be stuff you want.
Yeah.
And with Red Dead and what they did with
Thunder. I will be on the Red Dead train all the way to the last piece of DLC.
When a studio has done something to prove to me, yes, this is absolutely something I want, but generally, I'm much more likely to play like a Game of the Year edition, go back with all the DLC included on a game I might have missed than I am to buy DLC for a game I already own.
But for Red Dead, surely you'll be buying the DLC.
Red Dead, I'm going to play everything.
Right.
Well, I do a show about
You have
Red
your
Dead.
Own podcast about the game.
Play some Red Dead. I mean, pretty much there's one game for Jared from late October till the end of the year.
Same here.
Beginning of next year.
My wife is fully prepared to be a Red Dead Widow come release time.
The Red Dead Widows is my new band. Number four, Not So Quiet Riot. This from Matt Kim at US Gamer. Riot Games outlined new changes to its internal culture following damning accusations that the company fostered a climate of widespread sexism and misogyny. Riot announced a series of steps to combat this internal culture and issued a public apology for its past failures. A report from Kotaku's Cecilia Danastasio, thank you, detailed multiple instances in which women were harassed or devalued at Riot and painted an overall picture that Riot was a hostile work environment to anyone who didn't fit its narrowly defined male-dominated gamer culture. Following the report, many former Riot employees took to Twitter and personal blogs to share their own stories about the harassment they faced or witnessed while at Riot, oftentimes leading to them departing the company. In response, Riot published a new blog with both an apology and seven steps toward internal reform. Riot calls its internal culture change a, quote, top priority, and says that no one and nothing is sacred when it comes to making changes and that Riot is removing employees in the process. We're committed to do things the right way, and we know the change we need isn't going to happen overnight. We are taking everything we've learned from Rioters and leading culture change experts, and we're starting to develop a plan with substance. You can read Riot's blog post for a full outline of how it will change its internal culture, but Riot divides its first phase into seven steps, expanding the culture and diversity inclusion initiative, revisiting cultural definitions, third-party evaluation, investigation process, reevaluating recruiting, trainings, and staffing up for D&I. In short, Riot is expanding its diversity initiative with a new team that will lead Riot's cultural evolution and work at every level of company and report directly to the CEO. Riot also hired two third-party consultants to evaluate Riot's culture and work on new practices to put in place at the company. Riot will also reevaluate language in its company manifesto like gamer and meritocracy, which was language Riot employees cited as exclusionary and used to discriminate against employees or prospective employees that didn't fit with Riot's definition. Recruiting will also be revamped to make the system more open to previously overlooked demographic groups and expanding which universities to hire from. Training will be expanded for all employees and include interview training, anti-harassment training, and anti-bias training. Meanwhile, Riot continues to investigate harassment claims, admitting that it has removed employees because of their investigation. Riot also set up a new internal team to investigate new claims and set up an anonymous hotline to report instances of harassment. Lastly, Riot is hiring a new chief human resources officer and chief diversity officer who will join the executive leadership team. There's more to the article. I kept that as short as I could and still have context, but I know that was a long read. Sorry about that, Gary.
Sorry.
So before I ask you about this, my first advice to anybody interested in this story, before you start shooting from the hip, go read the Kotaku story. Go read the Riot blog. This deserves a lot of context. And I know people have kind of pre-ingrained opinions when they hear words like diversity initiative or stuff like that sometimes. You really need to read everything before you make up your mind about this, regardless of your political, social, or cultural predispositions. There's a lot of information out there. It is very obvious some inappropriate things went down. That's pretty clear. By any definition, some inappropriate things went down to the point that people are being removed. Gary, what are your thoughts on this this whole thing?
So fortunately, I did have the opportunity to read the whole blog post this morning before I came in. So I can now shoot from the hip with impunity.
Good.
It sounds to me like they're doing the things that they need to do. They're checking all the boxes that one should check when you're in the kind of hole that they're in. I did read the original story about the culture at Riot, and it did sound like it was deeply dysfunctional and just totally busted. and was making a lot of people very, very unhappy. And hard to know at this point if this is just a face-saving exercise, if it's an exercise in PR, or if they're sincere about really making these changes. Time will tell.
Is there an all of the above tag on that, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, yeah, I mean, I think they recognize that this is something they need to do, both in terms of their outward perception, but also inwardly. Like, the company, if the culture was truly this dysfunctional, it's not sustainable.
Yeah.
And so, for the good of everyone within and without of the company, I remember I reading kind of the boxes they were checking earlier today, you know, about the external oversight, you know, the external consultants and the anonymous hotline and diversity training for everyone. I mean, did you read it and think, yeah, that's great, but what about this? I mean, it seemed like they were at least doing all the things that you would expect them to do in order to try and address this.
I mean, I used to work in the communications arm of a publisher, and I look at that statement that they wrote, and it's like, okay, so this is, I think, if in my opinion, their first step. They're just being as transparent as they can responsibly be at this moment.
The tone was very contrite, which I think is appropriate.
Yeah, but you can't, you also want to, if you say too much too early until you've done the work,
right,
and this kind of process takes time, and they're very transparent about that in their statement, you really can just make things worse. I think that they put this together pretty well on their public-facing end. And I think, like you said, a culture like that isn't especially sustainable.
No, not at all.
On top of the pragmatics of the business end of it and how it can damage them, there's also just the ethical end of it, where people don't, by and large, I mean, yes, you always have your jerks, you always have your sociopaths, you always have your exploitative personalities, and you have people that just turn this part of their mind off part of the day. But by and large, people don't want to work at a place that's awful to work at.
No.
And that makes this a problem that they have to fix and they should fix. It has been a rough month at Riot. Tencent reevaluated its game funding and game focus. They own Riot based on adjustments in the Chinese economy earlier this month. This all broke. It is a really hard time to be there, but they are being forced into a position where they're going to have to change. They make an exceptionally, exceptionally good video game. They have a vast community. They got a lot of talented, good people that work there. I know people that work at Riot. They're friends of mine.
People don't often realize just how big League of Legends is. Yeah, it's massive.
It is massive. And the fact is that there's so many good people in that company. I said, some of these people are dear friends of mine that deserve better than the crap that we saw in these reports. Nobody should have to work in a place like that, especially at a company with that kind of resources behind it.
Yeah. And so I think the beginning of some steps that they needed to take to ensure their own survival, because as we said now a number of times, it's not sustainable. Let's hope, and I don't think they could, I'd like you to say this seems premature, but I don't think they could wait forever to say, well, these are the steps we will be taking, even if it is just like, we know that this is not fixed, but this is the beginning of us attempting to right the ship. Hopefully, this will be the first of many updates when they come back to us in 6 months or 3 months or a year or however, and say, okay, here's what has now, here's the company we are today as opposed to the company we were 6 months or a year ago. They're saying that we're going to do these things is a good start, but it is only that, a start.
Well, they're in a PR position where where their decision to be transparent handled smartly can only make things better. When you've bottomed out, you can talk yourself into a worse situation, but it looks like the way they're approaching it looks too well handled for that. More communication right now, handled as thoughtfully as this was, will likely only improve their situation. Yeah. So I expect a lot more communication.
One thing that they left out of here is my guess is, and I stress I'm only guessing, they're probably not telling you about the crisis consultants and the damage control consultants that probably helped them craft this statement and said, look, if you want to fix this, these are the things you need to do. These are the things you need to be seen to be doing. And this is how you need to communicate it. Because they were in crisis. And I'd be very surprised if they didn't bring in like a scandal type fixer to come in and tell them, yeah, you guys are in trouble. Here's how you dig yourself out and don't dig deeper.
I can't even imagine how many meetings went on to make that blog happen and how quickly they took place.
Before someone didn't just bash that out and hit send. That was, yes, absolutely.
No, definitely not. But that's about the culture of a company that makes a great game, will likely make more great games in the future. But I want to hear about games that are coming out today.
Good segue.
If I wanted to know, Gary Whitta, where I could find those games, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday. Isn't there a bit at the end?
There we go. There go. Cool Greg.
Wow.
Nailing it.
I'm loving the energy.
That was Greggy doing it. Sometimes Kevin does it, but I never do it.
I know, but I liked how you're like, yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah, it was very laid back. I pitched
a show starring Cool Greg today.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. I think that we need a show here at Kind of Funny with two high-backed leather chairs.
Okay.
A large, like in the Matrix, roaring like fireplace yes. between them.
Yes.
Little table with a doily.
Like a PBS... Yeah. Masterpiece Theater yeah, kind of vibe.
You got some bookcases behind
yeah.
there.
I'm liking
it. It's just Tim Geddes and Cool Greg.
Okay.
Sitting side by side.
Yeah.
And they just tell anecdotal stories from their childhood as brothers.
All right.
Like Cool Greg's awesome yellow Spider-Man t-shirt story that he needs to tell one day. Because I love that story. But let's talk about what's out today. Scum onto Steam Early Access with an introductory price of $19.99. 3-on-3 Freestyle for Xbox One. A Total War Saga Thrones of Britannia. Daisy for Xbox One. Twin Robots Ultimate Edition for Xbox One. Western 1849 Reloaded for Switch. The Elder Scrolls Online Wolf Hunter Dungeon DLC. Update 19 live now on PS4 and Xbox One. And Daisy on Xbox One. As always, I want to thank our friends at Kotaku who helped us put this list
Daisy
together.
Daisy is so good. Apparently, it's coming out twice today.
Oh, wait. Is it on the... It's so good. The game's
so good. They released it twice.
It's so nice. We said it twice.
Yeah,
that's what it was. Yeah. Ah, look at that. I never the list twice.
I've been watching a little bit of Scum because a lot of the streamers have been streaming it lately, and I've been trying to figure out exactly what it is. Have you seen this game?
Well, I mean, it's the scripting something for Maniac Mansion, obviously, right?
Well, that would be with two M's.
Yeah, exactly.
But this game is very strange. I was watching someone wandering around. It looked like you play like kind of an escaped convict or something, and you're trying to craft weapons. And I thought it was just like a stay, you know, don't get caught by the cops or whatever. You've broken out of prison because the guy's wearing like an orange jumpsuit when he starts. Next thing you know, there's zombies. Next thing you know, there's mechs wandering around. It's got zombies and mechs.
Can I kill a mech with a sharpened toothbrush?
This game has such a level of granularity that one of the things you can track is the number of teeth your character has at any given time.
Oh, that's great.
If you're into crafting at an absolute, like at a subatomic level, and tracking every possible stat and biorhythm that your character has, this might be the game for you.
I can't remember the name of the game. It was Crimson something, I believe. It's a 3DS RPG. I actually really liked it, but I can't remember the name of it, where you roll the dice in the bottom window.
Okay.
And Penny Arcade, I believe, was made a joke once that this was a game so granular that you could find an item that gave you a +4 against Minotaurs. I really liked that. I thought that was new dates. Open world survival horror game The Forest launching on PS4 this fall. This one by Alex Gibson. Developer End Night Games has today announced that PlayStation blog that its open world survival game The Forest will launch on PS4 this fall, November 6th. This one, by the way, from Big Twinfinite. Previously only available on PC, The Forest is now on its way to Sony hardware. The Forest takes place on a wooded peninsula that a father and son have crash landed upon after having survived a plane crash. Playing the father, it's your job to survive this rugged wilderness and a mission to find your son. But something sinister lurks in the bushes that's after both of you.
Sounds like After Earth, but good.
You know what? I told my wife the other day that you wrote After Earth.
Co-wrote.
Yeah. And she said, I liked After Earth.
You know what? It's not that bad. I make jokes about it because everyone else does, but it's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
It's not bad. It's not as bad as they made out. And I'm not saying that just because I've got my name on it. It was all right.
Deals of the day. Folks, it's time for those PS Plus games. Free PS4 PS Plus games for September 2018.
I have PS Plus, so this is relevant to my interest.
One is out now. This is by Chris Reed at GameSpot. Sony has announced the games PlayStation Plus members will be able to download for free in September. As usual, subscribers will get two games each for PS4, PS3, and PS Vita between September 4th and October 1st. Two things about this month's offerings are unusual. First, all six games are cross-buy with PS4, so you don't need to dust off old hardware to play them. Secondly, one of the games is available early, right now, in fact. Here's what PS4, PS3, and PS Vita games PS Plus members can expect to get for free in September 2018. The biggest game in the list, and one you can download right now, is Destiny 2.
Ooh.
The shared world online shooter launched last year to wide acclaim before much of the player base ran out of things to do. All this year, Bungie's been adding content through expansions and surprise updates in order to create more in-game content. The effort has seemed to pay off, with the major Forsaken expansion coming in September 4th. The player base seems to be coming back in a big way. Better yet, everyone with a copy of Destiny 2 can participate in a 24-hour free trial of the upcoming PvP meets PvE Gambit mode starting September 1st at 10 a.m. PT. If you want to see your options for accessing Forsaken, take a look at our Destiny 2 Forsaken pre-order guide on GameSpot. The other PS4 game free to PS Plus members in September is God of War 3 Remastered, a souped-up version
nice.
Of the PS3 classic. September's PS3 games also available on PS4 are Another World, 20th Anniversary Edition, and Cube Director's Cut. The PS Vita games, again playable on PS4, are Sparkle 2 and Foul Play. And while these aren't specifically in September's lineup, PS Plus members can still download the smartphone-controlled trivia game Knowledge is Power through November 6th and PSVR horror game Here They Lie for free through October 2nd. It's also not too late to download August PS Plus freebies, which include Mafia 3 and Dead by Daylight on PS4, Bound by Flame and Sirius Sam BFE on PS3, and Draw Slasher and Space Hulk on PS Vita.
It's funny, isn't it, how much the Destiny 2 life cycle has wound up mimicking that of Destiny 1. They said that they were going to learn from the lessons of Destiny 1, where the game was kind of broken and not great at launch, and it was only when Taken King came out, the first big paid expansion, It righted the ship. It's happened again here. Destiny 2, out of the gate, seemed to kind of fall on its face a little bit. I played it. I got bored with it very quickly. A lot of people were running out of things to do. Felt like they were banging their head on the ceiling of the game. But now here comes this big, we've listened to the players. Here's basically Taken King 2 in the form of Forsaken. And now maybe people are coming back around again. It's same story all over again.
It's almost as if AAA games as a service games actually release incomplete. And then lot of content comes along later and they try to sell it to you again.
Now I'm starting to understand your cynicism about DLC, because in this case, that is maybe what happened. Maybe they had to hit their date. They knew that it wasn't everything they wanted it to be. And it becomes, we'll fix it with the DLC.
Perhaps.
And we'll get some more money out of the player base in the meantime. Get another $30 or whatever it is they're going to gouge your players for this time.
Reader mail brought to you for Hims. There's a problem. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. Ladies and gentlemen, that's what happened to me.
If Gary, you have a camera in the back here, you can see happening to me as well.
Yeah.
Did you lose it from the crown or from the front?
I lost it from the all.
It just started to go.
It just all started falling out. Yeah, it just one day I woke up and a triple fell off my head.
I'm losing it from the back here.
Yeah. But the thing is, when you start to notice hair loss, it's too late.
Fucking A.
Yeah, absolutely. We are experts on this subject. It's easier to keep the hair you have than to replace the hair you've lost. 4hims.com is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, sexual wellness for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional.
I should sign up for this because I have hair loss. I have bad skin, and I'm sexually unwell. This hits all the buttons for me.
You should do this. Right now, there's a good deal here, too. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss, well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. No snake oil pills, no gas station counter supplements. Prescription solutions backed by
gas
science,
station
but without
counter
a waiting
supplements.
Room. No awkward in-person doctor visits. Save hours by going to 4hims.com, answer a few quick questions. A doctor will review and can prescribe you. Orders are shipped directly to your door. You can order now, and our listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See the website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to a doctor or a pharmacy. Go to 4hims.com/gamesdaily. That's FORHIMS.com/gamesdaily. 4hims.com.
Sometimes when I'm at the gas station, though, and I might never have to go to a gas station again because I'm picking up my electric car today, but I might still go to a gas station because every now and again, especially when I do that drive to LA and you stop at those big gas stations where they have everything, like the ones, the truck stop ones that have the showers and the video arcade and like everything you can imagine. Sometimes I just want to buy a bunch of those pills and just take them just to see what would happen.
It might kill you.
Surely not. Yeah, but so you, and they're like a lot. Of, like one of those pills is probably like 20 cups of coffee.
Yeah,
for truckers that are like smacking himself in the face. Don't to like stay awake, stay awake.
No, don't die again.
You don't think I should take a bunch of those?
No, I don't think you should take one of those pills.
That would be fun content though, to come in. Instead of bringing in British food, I just bring in a bunch of gas station pills, and we all take them.
No,
and,
no.
And then just like keep the camera on
this
us.
This is a very...
Do it for Extra Life for Kids.
Wait,
so,
no.
Cool Greg's going to do it.
We already played...
Greg, would you do that with me?
Yeah.
You would? Yeah. We're going to go pill... It'll be like a drinking contest, but we just go pill for pill until one of us falls over. Fucking explodes through the ceiling. Whichever comes first.
On Gamescast, we played mobile game or gas station pill. And that is as close as we are ever going to get.
There's a mobile game called Or Gas Station Pill?
No. We played Mobile Game or Bullshit, and that week it was Mobile Game or Gas Station Pill.
Oh, no, this would be just Gas Station Pills.
This is what's going to happen is you're going to take these, and it's going to be like Daffy Duck when he turns green and dies and his ghost like comes out. No, you don't do that, Gary.
Have you ever heard of my game Space Rocks? My idea for a board game?
Expound.
I used to talk about this on the. I got to the point I was gonna kickstart it. I have a brilliant idea for a board game, and it occurs to me that it would go very well with gas station pills. We should do this party mode. You want to hear what the ultimate party mode is? The audience would fucking love this. You want to hear it?
I'm ready to hear it.
Okay, so my game is called Space Rocks.
Okay,
so you've got you don't even need a board. You just need like a flat surface. You can play it on the floor.
Okay,
it's very easy to play.
Okay.
And the box, the game, it comes with a sheet of instructions, and the instructions are very easy. See, I don't like these board games like Ticket to Ride and Settlers of Catan, where the first 6 hours of your gaming night are just learning the fucking rules.
Right.
Because they're so complicated. I want to play a game with simple rules.
So you're not a fan of the Cones of Dunshire?
The what?
Cones of Dunshire. That's not
your thing? Is that a game with a lot of rules?
Yeah.
Then I'm not a fan of it.
Okay.
I don't like rules.
Yeah.
I want to be free.
Mayfair game's not your thing.
No, this would not. If the game comes,
so tell us about Space Rocks.
Okay, so Space Rocks is basically what comes in the box is basically a bunch of rocks, and they represent asteroids.
Okay,
in floating in space, hence space rocks. And the object of the game is you've got all the rocks laid out like on the playing surface before you, and it could be just you and me, could be four players, could be six, however, whatever. The object of the game is to acquire as many space rocks as you can. And at the end of the game, the person with the most space rocks is the winner.
Is this like Hungry Hungry Hippos with your
it's
arms?
It's kind of like Hungry Hungry Hippos, but that's it. Those are the rules.
Okay.
You acquire the space rocks, however. Violence.
Yeah.
Intimidation, threats.
Bribery.
Mostly violence, I think, is where it's going to go.
Uh-huh.
But like whatever you, like at the end, you set a timer.
Okay.
Set, put your iPhone over here, set like a two, say the game can be as long as you want it to be. If you want the game to be more violent, set for a shorter timer,
so
basically.
So this is just Rugby the board game.
It's Space Rocks.
Yeah.
And there would be a lot of fights, physical fights, and see, Greg's liking this as well.
No, I play this.
Starting to realize more and more that Greg is really the person I relate to best on this show.
Greg is the person all of us should relate to best. Greg,
When I tuned into the Kind of Funny Twitch stream recently, it was streaming in the evening. I was like, why is it streaming in the evening? And it was just Cool Greg playing Simpsons Hit and Run and drinking bottles of malt liquor. I'm like, that's the content that I want.
Greg is the sword in the stone that holds this place together.
I'm telling you, that was premium content.
Yeah.
And so Ultimate Party Mode, we'll play Space Rocks, we'll take a bunch of gas station stimulants, and watch your numbers rise. I guarantee it. Greg, would that not be premium content?
You are describing right now is pretty much a Thursday night in small town Florida where I used to live.
Yes, like, and I'm telling you, that is what the people want.
Okay.
That is what the audience want. If that's the content that you want, I encourage you to tweet into Kind of Funny, to Greggy or whoever, the people that make the decisions around here, and tell them that that's what you want. You want Space Rocks, gas station pills, and violence.
Do you think we should replace the Kind of Funny inner website tourney at PAX with Space Rocks?
I'm telling you, you would pack that place out.
Just see like Andrea like pulling off like because you know Andrea often dressed to the nines for these events.
Yeah,
pulls off a high heel, just sticks it through Tim Getty's eye.
It would just be like one of those old soap opera bitch fights that they used to have. Like when Alexis Carrington.
You took it a whole new level.
They used to have these epic fights on soap operas when people would like scream and shout and pull each other into the fountains and fight and kick each other, and it was compelling television. Now you have that in reality television. That's where, like, the Real Housewives of whatever, throwing drinks in their face and throwing their shoes at each other. These shows are super, what's the word? Good. They're super good. And this is the content that people want, and we need more of it on Kind of Funny. I'm telling you, I will license to you. This is $1 million idea that I'm giving for free, basically.
I have never
space rock the gas station pills
term. I'm moving on. Moving on, my friend.
You can go get the rocks from anywhere. The game actually officially you could buy the game in a box, and it would have the rocks in it. They would be the official space rocks. Or you could just go get a bunch of rocks from your backyard or whatever. The game essentially costs you nothing. I expect people to start playing this tonight once now they've heard the idea. I'm so glad that this game is finally getting a good audience. Because no one on the old Tested podcast when I used to do it, no one listened to me. Now I feel like the Kind of Funny audience I finally found. I finally found the audience for this game. Space rocks. Maybe there's a version of the game where you bundle in the 5-hour energy extreme gas station pills in the game, and everyone takes a couple of pills before you start to ensure a good, you know, because you don't want a game to be slow.
That's
right. You want
that's the game DLC design.
You want the game to move quickly.
That's the DLC.
So if everyone is like caffeinated, like out of their minds, you know the game's going to move. Like if everyone's like jittering like this, you know the game's going to move fast. We should probably move on.
We should probably read some reader mail. Yes,
but
yes,
we are going to party mode. Keep. Stay tuned.
The Mighty AKOD says, "Hello, Jared and Gary. I tried Windjammers a while back, but I'm not really hooked by it. That being said, I like it when you are both excited for the same game. What would be some changes or things you'd like to see in Windjammers 2? Love the show. Keep up the good work." So for those of you that weren't here for Gary's last amazing, incredible supercut that
we talked about Windjammers a lot, didn't we?
You mentioned Windjammers a great deal. We talked a lot about why it works. Windjammers is really just Pong with fighting game mechanics. It's kind of spectacular.
What's going on here?
Kevin's leaning in. All right. Everything's all right?
I thought I was about to get Shepard's crooked off the table.
I wasn't sure what was happening
here.
There. Yeah. What do you want to see change in Windjammers 2?
Well, I would need to play Windjammers 1 to have an informed opinion.
You talked about everything.
It's the game. It's the greatest disparity between the amount of time I've spent talking about Windjammers and playing Windjammers. Spent time talking about Windjammers? A lot.
I'm not sure how
time
much you know about
playing
Space Rocks
it, none.
Either.
No, Space Rocks, I'm telling you, because it's simple. It's simple. The more rules, the more points of failure there are in the game design. The simpler the rules, the less likely the game is to... And there's no, like, sitting around for... Oh, well, okay, but hold on a second. You, player 3, you cannot move to a red square unless you've previously been on a blue square.
Moving on. So the answer to your Windjammers question is I think
that... What do you want to see? You know it.
I think aesthetically, people that played the game before with all the fuchsia colors are going to expect that kind of palette change. I do think that making the game look not more contemporary in terms of 3D or anything, but adding optional art styles that don't necessarily lean as much into fuchsia land as the first one did. I think that could be fun.
Okay.
Maybe make a game that and I also don't want it to be dark and edgy, but I think having optional aesthetics, more quartz, more characters. I really think it's key that they keep the mechanic where a lot of the game's appeal is risk reward based on whether or not you're holding a button down at a particular moment.
Okay.
Where you have two very important things you can do, but you can never do them both at once.
Right.
It was built around the Neo Geo control scheme. I'd like to see it optimized for the kind of analog home controllers that we use now. I think that would be a big deal. It's designed around arcade hardware. I think that refining the controls so that they built around home hardware.
Do you think that the anime style of the trailer will be reflected in the same way that you saw the Streets of Rage 4 trailer?
Yes, I think it'll be
the game itself is an anime style. Do you think Windjammers 2, the cinematic trailer is an indication of what the actual aesthetic of the game will be?
I think it'd be a smart approach to take to it. Yeah,
I like
those
it.
Those characters are fun looking. From 32-bit player, greetings, Kind of Funny Games Daily crew, Jared and Gary, as the resident elder statesman of Kind of Statesmen of Kind of Funny.
We are cheeky bastard.
We are elder.
We are. Are we the two oldest people here?
Oh, yeah.
I know I am.
We are the Ancient of Days. Absolutely.
How old are you?
Huh? I'm baby.
You know, blah, blah, yeah. Blah, blah, blah.
Jared and Gary is the resident elder statesman of Kind of Funny. You two seem like the perfect people to ask about your thoughts about all these retro and retro-inspired titles announced lately, just as you were bringing up a Streets of Rage.
Yeah, see, if anyone's going to be sitting in high-back leather armchairs, it should really be you and me.
What's your take on the older series like Windjammers and Streets of Rage returning with sequels in this day and age? Is it better for developers to make new properties clearly inspired by classic titles such as The Messenger and its harkening back to the NES and SNES eras, or are there compelling reasons beyond nostalgia to bring sequels to series decades after the most recent entry? I'd love to know your thoughts. Thanks as always for your time. Gary, your thoughts?
Well, I'm very glad. We talked about this the other day, didn't we? I think it was more to do with games showing up.
That was more to do with them showing up. What are your thoughts on original IP informed by old aesthetics versus new sequels to very old games?
I like both. I love to see something like Dead Cells, which has kind of a retro... I struggle to define it. When I first saw Dead Cells, I thought, okay, I get what they're doing, retro aesthetic. But if you look at it, it's actually more sophisticated than that. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit of a melange of... I don't know why the word melange... It's like the third time I've used it today. I don't know
Dune,
why.
Dune, Arrakis, Desert Planet.
Yes, because melange is actually the name of the spice.
The spice
That's right.
of Arrakis. That's
But I'm using it more in the traditional term, just like a mix of things. I'm very glad to see Windjammers coming back. I was so excited. But I really wanted to come in. I was really hoping that Streets of Rage 4 trailer had dropped on a day when I was going to come in to talk about it, because I love Streets of Rage.
Yeah.
And Streets of Rage 4, that came out of nowhere. That was exciting. I was like, oh, wow, look at this. Looks great. I love Streets of Rage. I want more of it. I would love to see Final Fight come back in a similar way, because given the two, I loved Streets of Rage, but I was always more of a Final Fight Mike Hagar kind of guy. Oh, I love Hagar.
Put your arms and spin in a circle. It's a good life.
I love Mike Hagar.
Do you ever play that wrestling game he's in? That Capcom fighting wrestling game?
Yes, Saturday Night Wrestling or whatever it's called.
I can never remember the name of it.
Yeah. One of the few good wrestling games of that generation.
Got Mike Hagar running around smacking people around. It's pretty amazing.
I love that.
Yeah, I feel like it's a lot of it's around marketing, honestly. Switch has been... So something's happening, something really weird. Retro-style games are selling consistently well right now. And some of those are tied to the success of the Switch and the fact that people seem to be embracing the Switch for that kind of game. Some of it is most likely that these have actually been more successful in the past than people maybe paid attention to, and it's just kind of been a building industry as this retro wave has come back and kind of become gone from being something that was more of a novelty to a legitimate almost subgenre or genre of the industry now.
Yeah.
And so for some folks, it's just easier to get something with a familiar name approved, even if that familiar name is old. You know that there are Streets of Rage fans that are just going to buy Streets of Rage 4.
But will millennials care?
Will they care? We don't know. But they might if there's enough buzz. Whereupon something like Bloodstained Circle of the Moon or The Messenger, it has a retro aesthetic to lean in on, but it's an original IP, so it might be harder to get that funded or distributed originally.
Right.
But it also has potential to launch a brand new IP as opposed to revive one, which means you've got a little more room to grow. There's virtue to both. I like both. I think there's room for both. I'm just happy. We had Frank Cifaldi and Mike on the other day talking about, you know, Disney Afternoon Collection and just being shocked by that going out there and how well received it's been. And,
yeah,
you know, it's
still
really amazing.
There's still a lot of money in nostalgia.
And not just nostalgia, but good games. That's the other bit. These aren't just nostalgia games. They're really good. There was this whole cash-in period where people were just trying to make money on old names.
Yeah.
Crappy games based on familiar series. Now these games are crafted and people understand how to make them really well.
And they're games that we want to see. I mean, there's so much fondness out there for Streets of Rage. It makes something like Streets of Rage. My question is like, what took you so long?
Yeah.
Why do we have to wait so long for Streets of Rage 4?
We're just waiting on Yuzo Koshiro. That's what it's all been about.
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah.
So now I'm like, where's my Final Fight?
I want that Yuzo Koshiro soundtrack. But yeah, Final Fight would be great. I'd like that.
Road Rash. I'm going to say it again.
I'm going to say again, Road Rash. This one from Peter Fontana. Hey guys, in contrast to the negative feedback you got yesterday regarding your coverage of the Jacksonville shooting, I just wanted to say that for me personally, hearing you and Ben talk about it candidly helped me process the whole thing. For me, it felt like how you might decompress with close friends about a tough issue. On a more personal level, when I heard about the shooting on Sunday, I was hit kind of hard by it. Video games have always been my favorite way to escape, and the idea that it might not be safe to play video games at big events like this filled me with a kind of existential dread. Just hearing you guys casually talk about it helped me get out of my own head and mellow out. Yeah, so...
You guys got negative feedback for your coverage?
I wasn't there for this. So I'm simply reading this off mail we received yesterday, but I'm sure that people had different opinions on how everybody responds to these
things. Well, it's a very polarizing thing, isn't it? People get very passionate about it.
It is. Well, it's a disturbing thing. Gary, I made a little video after
I saw it. You put out a video, yeah.
And that's unusual for me. I don't usually respond to crises like these directly, but in this case, you know, I spent a lot of Sunday. I used to work at EA. I spent a lot of Sunday trying to find out whether the people who would have been at that event were injured or not. Thankfully, none of them were wounded.
Right.
Former coworkers, but still, there were other people hurt and killed. And it's always been in our backyard. It's always been a part of our lives. It's always touched us. But now, for people that play games, it's come a step closer than it was before in our consciousness. And I just wanted to, I hope what I did didn't come off as trite, but I think we all respond in the best way we can. I think that for me, it's just a matter of whatever we do, we're looking for somebody to blame. We're angry. We're scared. When you're angry, you want to control things. When you're scared, you do and say things you maybe you shouldn't sometimes. Accept those emotions as what they are, but when you interact with other people around this, try to work your way, I hope, toward something constructive as opposed to just putting up more walls in this discussion. Those are my thoughts. What about you?
Well, I don't want to get drawn into it too much. I have a lot of, you know, I come from the UK. I have a lot of very, very, very strong thoughts about the political aspects of it, and I don't want to turn this into a big thing. It sounds like it was covered fairly comprehensively the other day. I think it was Greg and Andrea that were talking about it, because I did catch a little bit of it. It's tremendously sad, and we can do so much more to prevent these things. It's the only country in the world where this sort of thing happens on the regular, and there's a reason for that, and I think we all know what it is, and I'll just leave it at that.
This one, Squad Up from Andrew on PlayStation, who says, best friends, I need some help. My friends have moved on from Destiny, leaving only three of us that are active in our clan. That's fine for Nightfalls and Crucible, but I want to do raids. I've only done the Leviathan a few times, and I've never gotten to even play the raid's lair. With Forsaken coming out, I could use some more friends to run the new raid or have some fun doing whatever. Thanks, and leave that poor chicken alone. And this is from DrewDrew7466. That's DrewDrew7466 on PlayStation. Looking
see
for
it again
Destiny
here,
help.
People drifting away from the Destiny clan because they've run out of things to do. Hopefully this expansion will start bringing some people back in.
Yeah. All right. Now, somebody erased the passcode off the wall.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. I don't know.
Just guess it. You've got 9,999.
No, totally didn't work here. We lock the iPad that we use for your wrong sometimes. I don't know why we put a lock on it, but we do. Yeah, why is it locked? What possible terrible use could this be put to? Thank you very much. All right, so Jody pops in.
What did we get wrong?
What did we? Oh, I'm sure many, many things.
I don't know if we went out on a limb on too many things there.
Let's refresh this here. Oh, come on, please, just refresh.
It might be one of those you're wrongs when people are just chiming in with a helpful comment rather than accusing us of getting something wrong.
A bit more inspiration on. Okay, that's just new information.
See if there's any feedback on Space Rocks.
Gary was wrong for not getting your Parks and Rec reference, says Toby Blow. I think you said enough about Space Rocks today. Regarding Destiny 2's DLC and Jared and Gary's skepticism, fixing the game for DLC, Forsaken is the third DLC for Destiny 2. Curse of Osiris and Warmind are the first two expansions, which were probably meant to fix the game after launch, but didn't. Forsaken is actually fixing the game. And that's from Chitty Chat Chat. Jared, I think the 3DS is titled, this is from The Hands. The RPG Jared mentioned is titled Crimson Shroud. That's it. Thank you, The Hands.
Okay.
That was a cool game. In fairness to Spider-Man, it releases September 7th and the DLC drops October 23rd, which is the better part of 2 months from Zephyr.
Good 6 weeks apart.
773. Lord of Pwns, Spider-Man DLC coming out. Yeah, it's the same. Sony does have an elite version of their controller. It's made by Scruff Gaming. The Scruff Vantage is officially licensed for Sony. It's $169.95 wired.
Oh, wow.
$199.95 wired.
I had no
scheduled
idea.
Scheduled to ship this month.
Not actually out yet. Okay.
Yeah. Let's see. George points out that Greg isn't shirtless Spider-Man. They're just acquaintances. That's a good point. And let's see. Looking at anything else here. No, I think that's everything. Okay, friends, thank you so much for joining us for this very long episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily featuring Space Rocks with Gary Whitta.
Coming to a store near you soon and to a party mode with gas station stimulants.
Ladies and gentlemen, do not take drugs that people sell at the front of gas stations in any quantity. That's a really bad idea. Just don't do it. And until next time, we're glad to have you here. Thank you so much for making our lives wonderful. See you next time.